I heard a story about a young man who was a city fella. He was raised a city fella. His father was a city fella. His grandfather was a city fella. I mean, these guys were city to the core. And one day this guy said, you know, this life is just way too stressful. It moves too fast. I'm going to go out to the country. I'm going to find something to do out there, and I'm just going to take it easy. And so the man decided he was going to become a chicken farmer. He bought 200 baby chickens, and he got them ready, and in the process, they all died. So he gets 200 more, and he brings them home, and in the process of being a chicken farmer, they all die again. Well, now the man's beside himself. He doesn't know why these chickens are dying. So he calls the co-op, and he gets the county agent there, and he says, listen, I've got a problem. I mean, I've got chickens, and they're not lasting very long. He says, I really want to be a successful chicken farmer. So I need to know, am I planting the chickens too deep or too far apart? And the county agent says, I can't answer that question until you send me a soil sample. Having the right information is going to be vital to doing any job that we have in front of us. Certainly that is true about being a mother. You're going to need the right information, and the world's not going to give it to you. As Brother Ayer said, the world's definition of a mother is much different than God's definition of what a mother should be. The importance of a mother is a lot different in the eyes of the world than in the eyes of God and those who love God and His Word. We're going to look for just a few moments this afternoon at this idea of young women professing godliness in motherhood and honoring motherhood. And we want to do that by defining simply, according to the Word of God, what is a mother. Now, the world will tell you a lot of different things, but we want to know what God has to say about it. Well, the first point we want to make is that a mother is someone who is blessed by God. The world looks down on those who are simply homemakers. In fact, I have a good friend. His wife went to a very prestigious university in Western New York. This is a very small university, maybe 400 people, all women that are there. And they turn out things like presidents of companies, CEOs, executives, entrepreneurs. And they send out a newsletter every now and then, and you're supposed to talk about what you've been doing and send it back, and they publish it in that newsletter. And when asked what her occupation was, she put on there, a homemaker. And they talked, and they said, could you imagine how people are going to see that when they get that and they read that? They're going to look at her life as a failure because she didn't become that CEO or that president of the company. They're going to look at her as an education and an opportunity wasted, when what they don't realize is that in all of those descriptions, in all of those jobs, she has the most important one that was listed. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 25 says, there is a way that seemeth right unto man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. The world has always looked down on God and His ways. The world has always made fun of that which is important to those who are righteous and upright according to the Word of God. Those who are mothers, as you pray, when you go get down on your knees and you pray to God, we're always thankful for what we have. We're thankful for our homes, our cars, for the money that we have in the bank, for the security that comes. But you need to understand the first thing that you need to be thankful for after your salvation is your family. Children are a blessing from God. Sometimes it seems like the blessing part is hard to recognize because of the nature of children. But the Bible does tell us that if you have a family, you are to consider yourself blessed. Not only is a mother blessed according to God, but she is also a blessing herself to her family. A mother who is what God would have her to be is going to be trustworthy and dependable. Proverbs chapter 31, beginning in verse 11, says, the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, that he shall have no need of spoil. Notice the description given here of this woman, this godly woman, this wonderful example of a mother. She is someone in whom her husband can trust, that her family knows is going to do what she needs to do in order to help them. She's the kind of individual that the father can go out and go to work, leave his children there with her, and know that when he comes back, they're going to be safe, they're going to be loved, and they're going to be better human beings than they were that morning when he left. We find also that a mother in the eyes of God is someone who is a safeguard against the world. Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 27 says, "She looketh well upon the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness." She's going to make whatever preparations are necessary to keep our family from falling into the trap of the world. You see, we make a big deal, and we should, about a father being a leader of his family, raising up his children, bringing his wife and getting her to follow the model of righteousness that God has for her. But we also need to recognize in the model of a home, there is a father and then there is a mother. And she has an equally important job in helping to nurture those children and to protect them from the world. We find that one of the greatest powers that a mother has is in the fact that she is the child's first teacher. Most of the time, everything that is laid down as a foundation of who a child is, what they're going to become, what they're going to believe in, what they're going to care for, is a direct reflection of their mother, the one they spend the most time with when they're young. Theodore Roosevelt once said, "When all is said, it is the mother and the mother only who is a better citizen than the soldier who fights for his country." The successful mother, the mother who does her part in rearing and training aright the boys and girls who are to be men and women of the next generation, is of greater use to the community and occupies, if she would only realize it, a more honorable as well as a more important position than any man in it. The mother is one of the supreme assets of the natural life. She is far more important by far than any successful statesman, businessman, artist, or scientist. The example that a mother leaves upon her children can either destroy their lives or it can build it up and strengthen it. It can either bring a family closer together or it can tear it apart. That's the kind of power and influence a mother has. And then as those children go out into society, that's the kind of society we become. The problem with our world is not that we don't have enough government programs. We've got too many of them as it is. It's not that we don't have enough safeguards and that our children don't have enough places to go that teachers can babysit them. It's that we don't have enough mothers and fathers fulfilling their duty and sending out into the world godly individuals prepared to face the world in righteousness instead of selfishness and neglect. God, in His perfect wisdom, has given us the home. And also in His perfect wisdom has given us the mother to help in the process of building that home, in nurturing that home, to strengthen it. Could you imagine what would happen if all of a sudden the parts of your car didn't work? My wife hates driving my car. She can't get it to start half the time. She can't keep it running. And I tell her it's because she's not holding her mouth right. I've got a great car if you know how to operate it. But if you get it in and you expect it's going to go like any other car, then you're sadly mistaken. It's not. But could you imagine what would happen if you were cruising along in your car and all of a sudden the brakes just decided, "I'm not going to do my job"? There'd be problems, wouldn't there? Probably a great catastrophe, maybe even ending in death. When the parts of a home are not working and working properly, there is an equally big disaster that is ahead. God has designed the home for all parts to be there and all parts to be working, and working in according to the parameters which He has set. Mothers should be concerned with developing personal character, not only in their children, but also in themselves. Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 25 says, "Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come." The only way that you can raise children that are godly and righteous is to be godly and righteous yourself. The only way that you can build character in the lives of your children is to show it to them by your everyday life and by your actions and examples. Character matters. And those who would honor motherhood and profess godliness in doing so must develop godly character. Peter stressed in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 through 4, says, "Whose adorning let it not be that of outward the planting of hair or the wearing of gold or the putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit." Now notice this, "which is in the sight of God great price. For after this manner, the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands." It is pleasing to God when we have mothers who also display character in their lives. It is pleasing to God to have mothers of a strong moral fiber who have first themselves been built up in the Word that they might build their children up. We want to look also this afternoon at a few examples of mothers in the Bible, both good and bad. Some of the lessons that they teach us and as we read their stories, and maybe some things that we can take with us. And those who are mothers, apply it to your lives. And those of us who are fathers can help our wives to become that kind of mother. The first example we want to look at is Eve. We all know the story about Eve. There they are. They're in the garden. Everything's beautiful, perfect. Nature working in its finest moment. Not a flaw around. She's got everything she could ever want. She's got food. She's got shelter. She's got warmth. But we find her at a particular point in the garden. And what is most notable is not what is there, but what is not. See, Satan waits and he catches Eve when she's away from her husband. And he uses that moment to tempt her into partaking of that which she should not have partaken in. When Satan can divide a couple, he can conquer the family. When a husband and a wife, when a father and mother are not on the same page, the family is not going to be what God wanted it to be. They leave themselves open for an attack from Satan himself, and they weaken the very fiber of that family unit. Matthew chapter 19, beginning in verse 5, says, "For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife. And they twain shall be one flesh, wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh." The word there, cleave, in the original language means literally to be glued together, to adhere to one another, to be fastened. That's the model that God has for mothers and fathers. As husbands and wives, you are to be on the same idealistic mindset as the other. If a father wants his children raised in godliness, let us hope also that the mother echoes that idea. As was said last night by Brother Melson, it is difficult when a family is built upon a house and a wife has to live with a husband who is not believing, or a husband lives with a wife who is not believing. But the difficulty increases when there are children involved, because there are souls there that must be cultivated and must be strengthened. And it takes both to do it as well as God would have us to do it. We find that Eve was one who was separated from her husband, and certainly we understand the idea of devotion here is not quite the same. She was just physically removed from him. And we're speaking more of ideology. But devotion is a very important part of a marriage or a husband and wife, father and mother team. Remember the vows that were taken in sickness and in health, richer or poorer, death do you part. Y'all remember all that, those of you who are married? Think about what was really said that afternoon, that evening, or that morning that you echoed those words. What you were saying is, regardless of what life has to throw at us, regardless of what situation we're in, we're going to stick together. That's called devotion. And it's needed in a home. It's needed in the hearts of fathers, and it's needed in the hearts of mothers. The devotion to stand together and to raise children aright. Another example I want to look at is the example of Sarah. She too had everything she needed. In fact, wealth and prosperity was what her life was really all about. You remember Genesis chapter 13 and verse 6, talking about Abraham and Lot. It says the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together. For their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. Notice what it's saying. They had so much stuff that they couldn't occupy the same spot. That's how rich these two men were. That's the kind of home that Sarah had. She had everything that was available to mothers of her day. She had everything that was available to those who were wives and women. Anything that she needed, Abraham had the ability to go get. Everything that she desired, he could go out and purchase. But we find her with one problem. She's without something that even Abraham can't go out and buy. She's without a son, without an heir. Now you could imagine probably the stress that she's feeling in her life. They've been taken away from their home, the land that she knew with people she loved, friends and neighbors. They've gone to this strange land because they had been called by God, had been given a promise, and the promise had not materialized yet. We see that Sarah, when she hears the idea that she's going to have a child, the only thing that she can think to do is to laugh. You see, here's Sarah's problem. As a woman, she was thinking carnally and not spiritually. She was thinking, listen, I'm too old to go through that process. My body is not going to be able to do that. There's no way I'm going to have a baby. She left something out of the equation. She had taken God out of it. And we know with God all things are possible. But when we think carnally minded, we too cannot see the answer even when God tells us it's there. Because she could not see the answer, because she was thinking carnally, she began to make compromises, even doing something that most women would never think of. She gives her husband to another woman to try to fulfill this promise. Hands him over to this other person. Just gives him up. Even though God's told her that she's going to be one that's going to bring the heir. She's the one that's going to have the child. But because she's thinking carnally, she can't see the answer. And so she begins to look for the answer herself. A godly mother must be able to focus on the promises that God has given and the task that is before them instead of merely the obstacles. When we think carnally minded, we refuse or cannot think of the promises that God has given us. God made the promise to you, those who are mothers, that you can be equipped with everything you need, thoroughly furnished to every good work, as Paul tells Timothy. And that includes the good work of being a mother. You can be a godly mother. You can raise your children in a godly home. I don't care what the world's going to set in front of you. But to do so, you have to be spiritually minded and not carnally minded. You remember, of course, the example of Hannah, how she had the same problem. She didn't have any children. She wanted them badly. In fact, she had to endure other people making fun of her because she didn't have a child. But look at the difference in the reaction of the two women. Both have the same problem. Sarah tries to accomplish it and to deal with it on her own terms. Hannah reverently, spiritually minded, turns to God and asks Him to help her with His problem. Of course, we also know the story that He does answer her request. But her request, she puts a condition on it. She puts it there herself. She says, if you'll give me a son, then I'll return him to you. And he's going to be dedicated and serve you. And the most remarkable thing about that story is that she keeps her word. I've got a daughter that's 2 years old, and I couldn't think of giving her over to somebody else, never being able to tuck her in bed at night and to play with her and bounce her on my knee and go to the park and all the wonderful things that she's learning right now. All of those milestones in life you'd miss. But she does it anyway because she made a promise to God. The lesson that we should take from Hannah is that our children are not really our own. God has given us this blessing, and just like every other blessing that we have in life, we are to use it to glorify Him. And at some point, He expects those children back. We need to raise them in such a way, with such character and attitude, with such knowledge of God's Word, that they're going to come back and be children of God themselves. Another example, as I move quickly through this, is that we find in 1 Kings chapter 15, verses 10 through 14. It said, 41 years reigned he in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom. And Asa did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, as did David his father. And he took away the Sodomites out of the land and removed all the idols that his fathers had made, and also Maacah his mother. Even her he removed from being queen, because she made an idol in a grove. And Asa destroyed her idol and burned it by the brook Kidron. Notice what's wrong in this story. It's the child that's correcting the mother, and not the other way around. You see, it should have been that mother that was teaching him that there are certain things that we're not going to do. We're not going to give ourselves up to idols. We're not going to start worshiping other gods, but it's the son that has to tell her. What a poor model for us to follow. We also find in the life of Jochebed that she was a mother who trusted in God. You remember her, she was living in a time when having children, especially of her nationality, was not safe. The great ruler of the country that she lived in had made a proclamation that all those children would be given up to the river god and thrown into the river. She comes up with a plan to build a basket, to make it watertight, to put this son in that basket and to send it down the river. If you look very carefully at the passage, you'll find that Moses' older sister is standing there, and it says that she was standing to watch to see what would happen to the child. To me, that's pretty remarkable when we think about it. She really didn't know what was going to happen to that child. She didn't have all the answers. She trusted in God to take care of him. Psalm chapter 18 and verse 30 says, "As for God, His way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried, and He is a buckler to all of them that trust Him." As mothers who are raising children in a world where, let's be honest, you don't have all the answers. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. You don't know how long you're going to be here. You don't know how long they're going to be here. Living in such a world, we have to trust God. We have to know that His way is right and His way is perfect, and He always is going to deliver His people. That His word is true. And that if we are faithful, even as we find in Revelation chapter 2 verse 10, even if it costs you your life, that at the very worst, even if this world takes the beating hearts out of our chest, God is going to make sure that we receive our reward for faithfulness. I want to try to, and this is going to be laughable maybe to some of you who are mothers, to try to put out some practical suggestions for motherhood. Now, the reason I think that's going to be laughable is because it is quite possible that many of you have been mothers longer than I have been alive. You've actually gone through this. You know what it's like to be a mother. Jim Nash said that he didn't know if he was qualified to speak on fathers honoring, or young men honoring fatherhood, because he hadn't been a father all that long. Whatever length it is, he's got me beat because I've never been a mother. So, having said that, I also want to preface this, as I did in the manuscript, by saying this. If you really want to know what it takes to be a godly mother, if you really want to know all the secrets, everything that's necessary, go find someone who is and ask them. Follow their example and let them teach you how you can become a godly mother as well. But we have three things that three rules here that I think is going to kind of sum up everything. And it's simply this. Number one, you need to cultivate Number two, you need to communicate. Number three, you need to reciprocate in order to be a mother who is godly in the sight of our Creator. Children are a lot like plants. They need to be cultivated. They need to be built up and raised up and given the right things. I was amazed that Monty came and he preached a gospel meeting for us. And we went out one time. For those who have been to the area that I live in, the coastal bend, cotton farming is a big thing down there. That's our cash crop. And we went out and they were picking cotton one day, and the girls got to ride around on a cotton picker, and he was showing this impressive machine. It's got these four big modules in the front, and he told us every one of them is the size, the weight, and the cost of a Ford Taurus. I mean, this is serious business. They have a machine, or a computer that's in that machine, and it takes soil samples as they go, and it measures the certain minerals that are in that soil. It tracks by GPS where they've been and which fields these are. And it tells it how much water's in there and how much they need to put back in for the next season. It's amazing what these machines tell them. All because of the simple principle that when you give plants the precise amount of the minerals and things that they need, they grow. Children are exactly the same way. If we give them everything that they need, everything that God says is useful for them, then they're going to grow. That's how powerful the Word of God is. But in order to cultivate them, in order to raise them upright, we need to learn to communicate with them. You need to watch what you say and how you say it. We find in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, beginning in verse 9, it says, "Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart, and put away evil from thy flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them." The point that the ecclesiastical writer is making here is simply this. Childhood is supposed to be a time of fun. You're supposed to enjoy your childhood. Now, he says it and he puts a little reminder on it. Remember, as you're enjoying your childhood, that you're going to be judged for the things that you do. But the principle is still the same. Children are supposed to have an enjoyable youth. As mothers, as parents, we're supposed to cultivate that and make sure that that happens. And if they live in a home where everything that is said is yelled, then certainly the memories of their home are not going to be as pleasant as they could be. Yelling, though sometimes necessary, is not always the greatest way to communicate with your children. It's going to take time and effort. We're going to have to sit down and talk to them. We're going to have to teach them instead of simply getting them to be corrected without any sort of reason. One of the things I can remember about my youth is, and probably everybody else here remembers this, there was a common phrase that I found coming up when I asked the question why, and it was the response, "Because I said so." And while that is a very popular answer, "because I said so" is not always the best answer. Children need a reason to understand behavior. We need to teach them not only what to do and what not to do, but why we're not to do those things. Communication is vital in any relationship, whether it is a husband to a wife, a boss to an employee, God to his children, or you to your children. Communication and that simple answering of that question, why, is very, very important. Those of you who know Jim Nash, know he's never been accused probably being a little guy. I've never been accused of being a little fella either. But I can remember the first time I met Jim, I shook his hand and he kind of shook me around like I was a rag doll, and that doesn't happen all that often. Now, could you imagine, here's Jim and I, both of us are preachers. Maybe you weren't a Christian. Maybe you didn't know very much about the gospel. And we came to your house and we knocked on the door. You answered the door and we said, "Hi, congratulations," as we grabbed you and said, "You're going to get baptized today." You say, "Why?" And we just simply say, because we said so. Because we have the ability to pick you up and throw you in the water. Because you're going to stay there as long as we tell you you're going to stay there. How good of a reason would that be for your conversion? Well, you would say to yourself, that'd be unacceptable. I wouldn't take that. Well, the same is true for our children. When the opportunity comes and they ask, Mommy, why do we have to go to worship again? Instead of saying, because I said so, teach them about the beauty of worshiping our God. Teach them how wonderful it is to assemble with the saints. How fantastic of a moment it is to be enjoyed. When teaching them lessons about why they should tell the truth, do so by explaining to them the importance of integrity in their lives. Simply saying, you need to tell the truth because I said so, isn't sufficient. We need to teach them why, the principles behind that which is right and that which is wrong. Finally, we need to reciprocate. That is, as Webster tells us, to give or take mutually, to interchange, to show, to feel, or to give a response or return. There are things that needed to be reciprocated in a relationship between a mother and her children. One of the things that we need to reciprocate is reward when the children show responsibility in their own lives. Balance is needed in child raising. Now, I may be misquoting him, I may be giving it to the wrong person, but I believe it was Grady Moore who said, sometimes children aren't raised up, they're jerked up by the hair on top of their head. Parents need to have a balance to how they raise their children. They need to show them both the importance of not doing what's wrong, but they also need to show them the reward and the happiness that comes from doing that which is right. When we look at a lot of examples that we find in our world, we find that a lot of people are neglecting one simple fact. And that is that the job of a mother and a father has always been and will always be to prepare their children to stand before their God on the day of eternity and to give an answer for their own lives. That is your job as a parent. Everything else after that is secondary. If you feed them, that's great. If you clothe them, that's okay too. If you get them to soccer practice on time, that's fantastic. But if you don't prepare their souls to answer on the day of judgment, you failed as a parent. It's an awesome responsibility when you think about it. One that needs to be taken very seriously, soberly. We also need to show them forgiveness as we find forgiveness in our lives. A godly mother is a lot of things, a blessing to our family. She's a guard against the world outside. But there is one thing that a godly mother is not, and that is perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has imperfections and flaws that need to be dealt with. And if our children see us dealing with those imperfections, it is a powerful lesson for them in dealing with their own imperfections. It's very difficult for us to admit when we're wrong. You can ask my wife, the one or two times I've been wrong in our 6-year marriage, it was hard to get it out of me that I had been wrong. But that's something that our children need to hear. When we react in a way that was uncalled for, when in anger or in frustration or whatever, we say something that we shouldn't have said, we need to be responsible enough to sit our children down and go, listen, I was wrong. And I'm going to make it right. So that way when they're wrong and they need to have the opportunity to make it right, not only do they understand it, but they've seen it in action. We also need to teach our children to think big. If you grow up all your life and all you hear is that you're never going to amount to anything, that you're not worth very much, maybe you're not very bright, you're going to tend to believe it. We need to prepare our children to be big thinkers. I understand that children are children. They're not prepared to go into the world. There's some things they're not ready for. But we can still teach them to dream big. One day those children are going to be adults and leaders. And they need to have the ability to think big. What is the message that we give them about the church? Have our children ever heard us say, you know, I don't think we're going to go door knocking with the congregation today because that door knocking stuff doesn't work. It just makes people angry. What does that tell them about the Word of God? What does that tell them about the importance of evangelism? When we say to them, listen, that preacher was long-winded again. We're never going to beat everybody else to Luby's if he keeps this up. What we're telling them is getting a good seat at Luby's is far more important than 10 extra minutes of hearing the gospel proclaimed. Matthew chapter 9 and verse 37 says, he said unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Recognize the message that that gives to all men. Those who are mothers, those who are children. And it is simply this, that the Word of God will work in our society. That it is adequate in its message. And it doesn't need to be changed in order to appeal to men. There are those who want to hear the gospel. There are lives that can be changed because of the message. Our children need to hear that. They need to know that the Bible that they study, that the gospel that they hear proclaimed is not simply some study in history or some tradition of their family, but it is a message that all men need, that is powerful. So many times we talk about changing the world with the gospel message. But if we're going to change the world, then it's got to start in the home. Our children have got to understand that the gospel is everything. And that the message of God makes us perfect and complete in that which is spiritual. If they're not learning those lessons at home, they're not going to carry them into the world. If they live with a mother and father that don't believe in the power of the gospel, they're never going to believe in it either. And chances are, if they never see you practicing the God-given responsibility of evangelism, you'll never see them practicing it either. We need godly mothers to teach children how to be godly. It's important that they do so. This world needs good families. It needs good fathers to be leaders in homes. But it also needs young women honoring motherhood, professing godliness by doing so. Teaching their children to take those same messages out into the world. That one day they might teach it to the world and that they might teach their children. It's a process that is like a domino effect, one after the other. But it has got to start somewhere. Brethren, let us hope, plead, and beg. And make sure that where it happens and where it starts is in our own homes. By professing motherhood to be honorable, though the world tells us it is not. I appreciate your time.